Kataksha Kirana Chanta. Kataksha Kirana Chanta. Naman Mohabdhaye Namaha.
Naman Mohabdhaye Namaha.
Anantananda Krishnaya.
Anantananda Krishnaya.
Jagan Mangala Murtaye.
Jagan Mangala Murtaye.
Together. Kataksha Kirana Chanta.
Naman Mohabdhaye Namaha.
Anantananda Krishnaya.
Jagan Mangala Murtaye.
Ahamasmi Sadabhami.
Ahamasmi Sadabhami.
Kadachinnahamapriyaha.
Kadachinnahamapriyaha.
Pramayvahamatasiddham.
Pramayvahamatasiddham.
Sachidanandalakshanam.
Sachidanandalakshanam.
Together.
Ahamasmi Sadabhami. Kadachinnahamapriyaha.
Pramayvahamatasiddham.
Sachidananda Lakshanam.
Mayevo Deti Chivyomni.
Mayevo Deti Chivyomni.
Jagadgantharva Pattanam.
Jagadgantharva Pattanam.
Atohannakatam Brahma.
Atohannakatam Brahma.
Sarvajnam Sarvakaranam.
Sarvajnam Sarvakaranam.
Together. Mayevo Deti Chivyomni.
Jagadgantharvapattanam.
Atohannakatam Brahma.
Sarvajnam Sarvakaranam.
Nasvatav Pratyavijnanat.
Nasvatav Pratyavijnanat.
Niramshatvan Nachanyataha.
Niramshatvan Nachanyataha.
Nachashriya Vinashanme.
Nachashriya Vinashanme.
Vinashasyadanashriyat.
Vinashasyadanashriyat.
Nasvatav Pratyavijnanat. Niramchatvan Nachanyataha.
Nachashriya
Vinashanme.
Vinashasyat Anashriyat.
Let's do that one more time. Together.
Nasvatav Pratyavijnanat. Niramchatvan Nachanyataha.
Nachashriya Vinashanme.
Vinashasyat Anashriyat.
Look at the second line. If I break the sandhi, it's na cha ashriya vinashat me vinashaha syat anashriyat. Then it goes, so nasvatav pratyabhijnanat niramshat tvan nachanyataha nachashriya vinashan me vinashas syat anashriyat. Okay. Look at the second line. Say it after me. Nachashriya vinashan me.
Nachashriya Vinashanme.
Nachashriya Vinashanme.
Nachashriya Vinashanme.
Nachashriya Vinashanme.
Nachashriya Vinashanme.
So, Nasvatav Pratyavijnanat.
Nasvatav Pratyavijnanat.
Nasvatav Pratyavijnanat.
Nasvatav Pratyavijnanat.
Niramshatvan Nachanyataha.
Niramshatvan Nachanyataha.
Nachashriya Vinashanme.
Nachashriya Vinashanme.
Vinashasyad Anashriyat.
Vinashasyad Anashriyat.
Nasvatav Pratyavijnanat.
Nasvatav Pratyavijnanat.
Niramshatvan Nachanyataha.
Niramshatvan Nachanyataha.
Nachashriya Vinashanme.
Nachashriya Vinashanme.
Vinashasyad Anashriyat.
Vinashasyad Anashriyat.
Together. Nasvatav Pratyavijnanat.
Niramshatvan Nachanyataha.
Nachashriya Vinashanme.
Vinashasyad Anashriyat.
Nashosha posha vikleda.
Nashosha posha vikleda.
Shedas chinna baso mama.
Shedas chinna baso mama.
Satyairapyani lagnyam baha.
Satyairapyani lagnyam baha.
Shastraikimutakalpitaihi. Nashosha plosha vikleda.
Nashosha plosha
vikleda. Vikleda. Che das chin nabaso mama.
Che das chin nabaso mama.
Nashosha plosha vikleda. Che das chin nabaso mama.
Nashosha plosha vikleda. Che das chin nabaso mama.
Che das chin nabaso mama.
Che das chin nabaso mama.
Nashosha plosha vikleda. Che das chin nabaso mama.
Nashosha plosha vikleda.
Che das chin nabaso mama.
Che das chin nabaso mama.
Nashosha plosha vikleda 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 che das chin nabaso mama.
Now, satyai rapyani lagnyam baha. Let me break this down. We've got Satyaihi, Api, Anila, Agni, Ambaha. Everybody see? Mm-hmm. Well, that's a tongue twister. That's why we're going over it again. Satyai Rapyani Lagnyambaha.
Satyai Rapyani Lagnyambaha.
Satyai Rapyani Lagnyambaha.
Satyai Rapyani Lagnyambaha.
Anilagnyambaha.
Anilagnyambaha.
Anilagnyambaha. Satyairapyanilagnyambaha.
Satyairapyanilagnyambaha.
Shastrai kimuta kalpitaihi.
Shastrai kimuta kalpitaihi.
So, together. Nashosha plosha vikleda che daschin nabaso mama. Satyai rabhyani lagnyam baha shastrai kimuta kalpitaihi.
Okay. Now, this is the one we're on. Repeat after me.
Abharupasya.
Abharupasya.
Vishwasya.
Vishwasya.
Banam.
Banam.
Ba sanidher vina.
Ba sanidher vina.
Kadachin.
Kadachin
navikalpeta.
Kadachin navikalpeta.
Kadachin navikalpeta.
Kadachin navikalpeta.
Ba chaham.
Ba chaham.
Tena.
Tena.
Sarvagaha.
Sarvagaha.
So the sandhi. Abha rupasya. Right? Abha. Ba negates. Abha rupasya vishwasya banam bha sannidehe vina. Rafe is the sarcasm. Bha sannidehe vina. Oh, sorry. I just want to make sure that that's not a... I thought it was a double duff or something. Sannidehe vina. Then, what's the matter?
Nothing, sorry.
Do you have everything?
Yes.
Kadachit. Kadachit. Then na. Avakalpeta. Bha. Cha. Aham. Tena. Sarvagaha. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, genitive, singular, abharupasya, vishwasya. Vishwa is really the noun, the other is adjective, in a sense. Vishwasya, for the universe, of the universe, whose nature is abha. Ba means really conscious, or it actually means light. Ba means light, but we use it for consciousness or awareness. So for the universe, Vishwa, whose nature, rupa, is abha, insentient, not shining, inert, not lit of its own accord. Abha rupasya vishwasya banam. The shining. Sometimes we say with banam, banam means, for light, but when we say, or even if we say the consciousness of something, it has more of a sense of, like this universe appears, it itself presents itself to us, it's shining, it's something that's taking place in our awareness, and we see it, we perceive it, so it's appearing to us. So you could say, like, the shining of the bond, the shining or the appearing or the appearance of this universe, which is itself insentient, which is itself doesn't have consciousness. So this shines for us. It is, we can even say like this, this universe enjoys knownness. It is known. So it shines to us. So the bonum, the shining of this universe or the appearance of this universe, which is itself is abha, is insentient. Ba sannidehe vina. With vina means without. Remember, vina governs the accusative, instrumental, and ablative. So here we've got the ablative singular from sannidhi. Without the proximity, or without the presence of, or the proximity of ba, of light itself, or of consciousness itself. So it says, the shining or the appearance of this universe, which is itself insentient, with self not shining by from its own standpoint, from its own nature, without the proximity of consciousness or light, using metaphorically of light, kadachit na avakalpate. Avakalp means to be able, to be capable of. It is not able. Kadachin na, it is never capable. It can't. Could never. Kadachin na. When you negate an indefinite pronoun, it becomes an absolute. So, kadachit na, kadachin na. Kadachit means sometimes. Kadachin na, kadachit na. Never. At any time. Is it able to? Without being in the proximity of consciousness, this creation, which itself is inert, is not conscious, can't shine unless it's in the proximity of consciousness, in the presence of consciousness, then it can appear, then it can present itself to us. But it can't present itself to us on its own, because it itself doesn't have consciousness from its own standpoint. But that's not true for the Atma. The self doesn't require anything for it to shine. It shines on its own because it is consciousness. It doesn't require consciousness to light it up. It is consciousness. So that's the next one. So we have kadachit, never at any time, avakalpeta, can it. Use the potential omnipotent singular here, avakalpeta, means it never can. It's an absolute. Like if I were to say, use a potential, You should tell the truth. You shouldn't steal. It's an absolute. So we use absolutes in that way. It is not capable. It is not capable at any time without being in the proximity of consciousness for it to shine, because it itself doesn't enjoy consciousness. Bacha aham, right? Cha, and Tena, therefore, and I am Ba, and I am consciousness, right? Tena, therefore, Sarvagaha, and therefore, right, and therefore, all-pervasive. I do shine, I am shining. And Tena, therefore, by means of that, so Tena or Tasmat can be used as therefore, or because of being, or by, because of that, by, due to that. Sarvagaha, Gaha, right, is gum. It's gone everywhere. Yeah. The one who's gone everywhere. So all pervasive. Because everywhere. Sarvagraha. Nominative singular. Tena, third person. Tritiya. Instrumental singular. Aham. Right, I. So I therefore am Sarvagraha. I do shine. And therefore I'm all pervasive. So that's pretty terse.
Yeah, I was going to say. Could you unfold that? Please.
Do we all have the word meanings?
No, I...
So, kadachit, with the na, means never at any time. Avakalpeta, potential, third person singular, atmanepada, from avaklip, means to be able to, can. So, it is never able to, it can never, right? It can never... So what can it can never shine. The bottom, the shining of this universe is not, let's see how to do that. The bottom of the universe, which itself is Abha, without Vina, the Sannidhi, the presence of consciousness, cannot shine, right, at any time. There is no shining possible at any time for this universe, which is Abha, which is insentient, does not have consciousness from its own standpoint. So there's no possibility at any time of there being the shining or the appearance of the universe without the proximity of consciousness. Everybody see? And I am consciousness. Tena, therefore, I am all pervasive.
Tena is therefore, or Tena is the instrumental form?
Because of that. See, that's just what I was saying. Like Tena and Tasmat. Often you just translate as therefore. But in the third case, it's, you know, by means of, because of, due to. That's one way we translate. But you can always say therefore, because of that, due to that, by that reason, by means of that.
Okay.
And tasmat is therefore also, because of that, from that reason, from that, because of that.
Yes.
So you'll find both tena and tasmat translating as therefore. And sometimes
but
that can also mean with or by.
Because of him or because of her. Or
yes.
Because of that in this or, context.
Yeah, or it can be by means of or with.
Right.
I go with him, you know.
Okay.
Or I travel by bus.
Right.
That's all, yeah.
Right.
So we need an unfoldment of the therefore, right?
We really do. Right. Okay. So now we know the meaning. Let's chant it a couple of times, then we'll unfold it. Abharupasya Vishwasya
Abharupasya Vishwasya
Banam Basanidhervina
Banam Basanidhervina
Kadachin Navakalpeta
Kadachin Navakalpeta
Bachahantena Sarvagaha
Bachahantena Sarvagaha.
Together.
Abharupasya Vishwasya Banam basam girvina kadachin navakalpeta bachahantena sarvagaha
abharupasya vishwasya
banam basam girvina kadachin navakalpeta bachahantena sarvagaha.
Okay. You know, when we look at the different prakriyas involved in making the student be able to actually see the truth of something, I can't just say, you know, the universe is inert and I'm self-shining and so I'm infinite, I'm all-pervasive. We can't say that. We have to first understand how what we mean by something that is something being Abha means it's not self-evident, it's not self-effulgent from its own accord, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So one way, and why this drishya, the seer-seeing differentiation, is so fundamental, right? That's a fundamental prakriya that has to be understood. Once you know your students have that completely, then you're not going to go through and every time unfold it from the beginning, right? But it has to be understood, because when you do that subject-object, the subject-object, drik-drisha, the subject-object-object differentiation, what you are really doing is differentiating consciousness from the object observed. Right? That's what's happening. Because if I am aware of something, like for instance, right now, just Swamiji is an example, it's kind of cute really. I'm aware of this painting, right? The painting's not aware of me, right? But the painting, for the painting to be known, it depends on me. Mm. It doesn't shine by itself. The painting doesn't talk to me, it doesn't see me. It's not one consciousness looking at another, right? Now, if that's not exactly true for us, like say, if I see you, you see me, right? So that takes more work to differentiate the consciousness, you know? Because if I say, I see you and you see me, then you're a conscious being and I'm a conscious being. So that takes more work. That's why the drisha has to be so thorough. But just to understand at the most gross level is that when I perceive that painting doesn't perceive me, nor is it self-shining. It requires a means of knowledge, you know, my sense organs and mind, in order for this thing to shine. It requires being in the proximity of consciousness for it to be known. So look very simply here. Now I'm looking at this painting, and so it's known, right? It appears. It's present to me. But if I look over here, it isn't present to me anymore. It's not appearing to me. If it were self-evident, then I would look here and there's the painting, and I would look here and see this, and the painting would be superimposed on it because it's also self-evident. Right? Yeah, but it's not self-evident. It requires consciousness. It requires perception. It requires perception and a mind, right? In order for it to shine, as does everything in this creation. For it to shine, it must be known. Okay? So far, so good? Everything that's external to my physical body. But to make that really clear in reference to other sentient beings, because all of you seem to have consciousness too, and so you have your own sense of self that I can say hi to you, you'll say hi back. We have to go further than that in terms of being able to differentiate the subject from the object. So it's not just that all of this world is, you know, because I see it, therefore I see it, therefore it is known, right? But if there's no consciousness there, then it's not known of its own accord. Now I have to look, I have to go farther than that. I have to see that not only this out here is something that is objectified and known because of me as the conscious being, I have to recognize that the body, your physical body, is in that same situation. Mm. That the physical body also isn't known without a luminary. You know, in this case, the physical body is known through my five sense organs, which are blessed by the mind. Five sense organs being used by the mind, and the mind itself is illumined by consciousness. So, if my five sense organs can appear to be illumining this body from your standpoint, because I'm looking at it, you know. But if my mind is traveling, you know, if I'm thinking about something or imagining something, there is no perception of this body. The body requires the sense organs blessed by the mind in order for it to appear, in order for it to be known. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's not illumined. So we move in. In Drik Drisha Viveka, we move consciousness in one step, you know, and then we move it in another step to the mind, right? Where without the sense organs being blessed by the mind, the sense organs are just inert instruments. They're not even functioning at all. They're not functioning at all. They're there. And you can even, you know, see somebody blinking and whatnot, but if you stare long enough, you'll see, well, they're gone, right? You see them just as kind of like that, lost. Because they're with their mind, so the sense organs are dysfunctional then. Even for the sense organs themselves to function, they need the mind. And blessed by the mind, also, the mind itself is aware of the sense organs. Right? I illumine the sense organs. So the sense organs themselves are inert. They're instruments. They themselves don't enjoy consciousness. They enjoy consciousness when they're being used by the mind. And then they enjoy the consciousness which the mind is using. But other than that, they're just objects. Right? But now, the thing is, So now, again, we've moved the consciousness in a step. But then we have to look at the mind. The mind, I mean the buddhi, the emotions, the manas, everything. That also is known. It enjoys consciousness, means the mind can say, I am a conscious being, so consciousness is not away from it. That sannidhi is there, right? The mind itself is very much in the proximity, in the presence of consciousness. And we just take the mind to be the conscious being, but actually when you analyze it, you have to make that differentiation, because everything in the mind is known, whatever the vritti is, even the ahankara, the buddhi, the manas, the citta, all of it is known, all of it is objectifiable, all of it is changing. And in fact, in deep sleep, when the mind goes into unmanifest condition, you know, it isn't known. There's no activity known. The ahankara itself goes into unmanifest condition in deep sleep. Right? The emotions go into unmanifest condition in deep sleep. They go into the avyekta, into causal condition. So does the buddhi, everything. And so that is all of that now is differentiated from the conscious being, right? The conscious being that remains with that anuvritti through every given state of experience. Now, you have to do that. You have to go through that whole drisha viveka in order to understand at all what they mean by ba and abha, the shining, the appearance of what itself doesn't enjoy consciousness. Right? So, in order to make that differentiation in any meaningful way, you have to come to that which is itself self-evident, right? The consciousness itself. If you don't do that, this doesn't make any sense. And you have to do it in reference to your experience, where you're making a subject-object differentiation. Everybody with me? So anything you can objectify is Vishwa, is the universe, because you can objectify it, right? And whatever can be objectified, right, is itself not conscious. Right? Because it's not going to talk back to you. There's only one consciousness. That's why we go through having to differentiate the whole, every part of the jiva from consciousness. You have to start with that differentiation. Once you make that differentiation of what is the conscious being from what is objectified, then the situation is this. The consciousness, which is now what you're left with, which can't be objectified, you've objectified everything in the... everything that can be is objectifiable, you've objectified. Anything in the creation is objectifiable. And you've objectified even the ahankara and what you know and what you don't know, your ignorance and your knowledges, and everything's objectified. You're left with consciousness itself. Now the question is, the consciousness, after you've objectified all these things, can consciousness be objectified? That's the next question. Can consciousness be objectified? Like, it's easy to say your mind can be objectified, or your body can be objectified. Can consciousness be objectified? What would objectify it? So, consciousness. So we need consciousness of consciousness to objectify consciousness. But then what's the dividing line between the consciousness and the consciousness? There's no dividing line. That's why we say, we use these terms, the consciousness itself is what we call svatasiddham. It's self-evident. Svatasiddha means it's self-established, self-evident. Or svaprakashatvam means it's self-luminous, it's self-shining, it's bha, it's consciousness itself, it's light itself, it's self-evident, self-effulgent, self-shining. All of these are the words that we use. That's why we use bha. Now, if it is self-shining and cannot be objectified, you've got these two things. It's self-evident and it cannot be objectified. Everything else can be objectified, but it can't. So now, what is its form? Because right. It can't be objectified, and so then it can't be one of the things in the creation. Remember in the previous verse we went through space, air, fire, water, earth, where space is the most subtle of the objects, and it's itself being the most subtle, and being only the guna shabda, sound is the only way of perceiving it at all, just through its guna. It itself is all-pervasive, and can't be touched by anything within it, space, air, fire, water, earth. It can't be touched or hurt or limited by anything in it. That was what we came to with space. And then it went, space itself can't be harmed by things that are in its own realm of reality. Vyavahara, space is Vyavahara. All of the space, air, fire, water, earth, the elementals are also Vyavahara. They're in the same order of reality. Mithya against Mithya. Even here, the Mithya, air, fire, water, earth, cannot touch the Mithya space. But the Mithya space and the Mithya, air, fire, water, earth, are of the same order of reality, but still, space is all-pervasive, being the most subtle, you know, and innermost to everything. Nothing can touch it. Then he says, what to speak of the Atma, which is itself aware of space? And so if the Atma, which cannot be objectified, right, is what we call Satyam. The Atma is called Satyam, that which is absolutely real, because since it cannot be objectified, it's not subject to time or space. Time or space belong to the creation. That's why even if I say, you know, with a dream imagination or the meadow imagination, space and time come within the imagination, within the dream. They're not out, they don't come from the outside. When the dream comes, time and space come with it, right? Time, when I see space here, space, air, fire, water, earth, that includes time because change is there. So time, change, space, and all of the elements come and they belong to the whole dream or to the whole creation or to the whole imagination. So you have to think of that also, that space itself, space, air, fire, water, earth, change and time belong to what can be objectified, you know, and which is all subject to coming and going. Whereas that which cannot be objectified is not subject to coming and going.
Okay? How do you objectify space?
Because you're aware of space. Like if you, when you look at the five elements, like here, if you're looking in this room, you know, you see all of these objects and you see the extension. Like, if there weren't space there, just to try to remove space, you know. You can't see space, but you recognize space. The only way you can have kind of a perception of space is through the guna of sound, because sound travels through space. But space is a given for you, because if you close your eyes, the space goes. If you go to sleep, the space goes. If you're awake and you have dimension, there's space there.
Yeah.
And so you objectify space, but you also have recognized certain qualities of space that I can talk to you about. You can say, you know, the space, how it pervades everything, everything moves through space. If I try to cut space, I'm not cutting space. If I try to burn space, space doesn't burn. So you have a perception, you have a knowledge of space, right? But the thing to understand is that space, dimension, along with time and change, come with the creation. That's why the dream analogy or your imagination are so important, because you see time, space, dimension all coming as part of the Maya, as part of the projection. And within that Maya projection, the projection of the creation, everything impacts everything else, except for space, in fact. Like you can heat water, you can cut wood, you know. The elements interact with each other. The wind blows and causes the fire to become to rage, you know. The water seeps into the earth and makes mud. So everything is interacting with everything else, and everything within the creation is in a constant process of flux, a constant process of change, right? Because the creation, I haven't forgotten the verse, because the creation is in a constant process of change, we can't say that anything in this creation enjoys the status of satyam, of being real. The reason it doesn't enjoy the status, the order of reality, for it can't be satyam, is because the definition of satyam, the very definition of what is true, what is real, is that which can't be negated in past, present, or future. It's that which is free of time. You know? Anything that can be negated in past, present, or future has a beginning and an end. Right? It comes into being, it goes out of being. That's the nature of change. Something comes into being and goes out of being. If it comes into being and goes out of being, it is bordered by non-existence. Right? Anything that comes into being and goes out of being, it's bordered by non-existence. Something that's bordered by non-existence doesn't exist. Right? If it's bordered by, you can't have something that doesn't exist come into existence. And yet, we experience all of these things. So here they are. But we can't say they're satyam because all of these things that are subject to change come into being, go out of being, we experience them. So now you can't say they're satyam because satyam means they're free from time. Only that can be real because nothing can come from non-existence or go into non-existence. But we experience it, so we can't say it's tucham, we can't say it doesn't exist. Because here we are experiencing it. So we have this wonderful category called mithya, right? What mithya means is that which you cannot categorize as sat or asat. And sat asat bhyam anirvachaniya means can't be categorized. It can't be defined as being real or unreal because we experience it here. Okay, so now that we have this category called mithya. It's neither sat nor it's asat. The entire universe, space, air, fire, water, earth, the whole maya, it has that category. Because everything within maya, including the maya itself, is in maya itself in that it projects, it resolves, it projects, it resolves. It itself is bound by continual change. Okay. And everything in it is bound by continual change, coming into being, going out of being, coming into being, going out of being. Everything. And so it's not satyam, but we experience it, so it's not tucham, it's not non-existent, so it's mithya. What Swamiji now defines mithya as that which is a dependent reality. That's a good, nice definition for it, that which is a dependent reality. What that means is that it has no reality other than what it depends on. Like the pot has no reality apart from the clay. In fact, there is only clay there. That's the satyam mithya. The pot depends upon the clay for its being. The clay doesn't depend upon the pot for its being. Okay? So that's the satyam mithya. When that is true, if this whole vishwa is categorized as mithya, right, there is no part of it that can be independent of satyam. If it's mithya, there's no part of it that can be independent of satyam. There is nothing that is satyam in the vishwa, in the creation. Right? Because everything is bound by time, it can be objectified, it can also be infinitely divided. All of these different prakriyas that we use, infinitely divisible, something that has a beginning and an end, you know, and so therefore it can't have any independent reality. I am the independent reality. Consciousness is the independent reality. Why? Because not bound by time, not bound by space, not objectifiable. It's not an object within the creation. And so therefore, I am, and I am consciousness. Right? Because when we do the Drishta Viveka, everything in the Vishwa, which includes your body, your mind, your sense organs, the ahankara, everything that can be objectified belongs to the creation. When I do the Drishta Viveka, the only thing left standing is consciousness. Not consciousness of something. Consciousness of something requires a subject-object relationship, like the mind, you know, and the sense organs, or just the mind itself, just something to... that has the capacity to exist within the universe and make a differentiation with something within it. Right? So we need an instrument in the creation like mind and sense organs to have knowership. Without that, there's no knowership. But consciousness illumines the mind. That doesn't make consciousness a knower of the mind. It means that the mind requires consciousness. Right? The consciousness doesn't require the mind. If we want to be a knower, we require the mind. If you want to see objects, you require your sense organs. But consciousness doesn't have as a quality knowership, it just simply is consciousness and it's non-objectifiable. So it's self-evident, Self-established means it is, right? Self-shine, self-evident, it is. I am, the amness, the being. And that being is consciousness. So the being that I am is consciousness. It is not objectifiable. It is not an object in the world. So it's not subject to space. It's not subject to time. I simply am. What size am I? What size am I? And where am I not? In reference to the creation. The creation is mithya. Mithya has no independent reality. There is nothing in the creation that has independent reality. Because everything is subject to time, everything comes into being and goes out of being, everything is objectifiable. Even though you as a jiva can't objectify everything, you can have a what we call an infinite extension, because everything that is capable of being known, you can say, must be objectifiable. Right? So now you get rid of, if you look at this, the whole Vishwa as being something which is objectifiable, you know, then what is its, what we call adhishtana? What is its reality? What is its satyam? You know? What is the satyam? It can't be any object in the universe. And so, in any type of analysis, when we're looking at any object in the world which is mithya, first of all, if every single object in the world is mithya, even no matter how small you go, like say if you go, okay, the pot is mithya, but the clay is also mithya, right? Because then we can say the clay shards are mithya, the clay atoms are mithya, the clay molecules are mithya. There's nothing there, even when you try to go in to what seems to be causal in terms of material cause of an object, like the material cause of the clay, of the pot, is clay. But the material cause of the clay is, you can say, the clay granules. The clay granules are what, and then you go to molecules, you get down to quarks. There's no end to it. It's an infinite regress in terms of getting into the actual substance of something. It's something you actually can't find in terms of name and form, because name and form always has a something inside of it. So as long as you have name and form, it's got something inside of it. It's got something inside of it, then we have to take off that name and form to find out what's inside of it. We have to take off those name and form to find out what's inside of it. Infinite regress. But all the way through that particular prakriya, what remains is the constant. It is known, whether it's the pot or the clay or the shards or the molecules or the quarks, as long as you have a means of knowledge for them, they remain known. And what else? The pot is, the clay is, the shards is, right? The molecules is. There is nothing in any experience ever at any time that is not known, chit, and is not is, waited, is not known and is not. So the sat chit, you know, is the satyam of everything. You can never get rid of the sat chit. And you can't say, if something is mithya, all the way down the line, it's mithya. Once you understand the mithyatva, what it means for it to be mithya, then it must have an adhishtana. And its adhishtana, in the end, can't be another name and form. What is it that is free of name and form? That whatever is free of name and form, by its very nature, is not objectifiable. Because name and form just means it can't be, one thing can't be differentiated from another. If you can differentiate one thing from another in any way, it has name and form, because it can be differentiated. So what doesn't have name and form, there's nothing there, no way to know it, there's no way to objectify it, you have no means of knowledge for it. The only reason you know it is because it's self-evident as consciousness itself. And that's always, in every prakriya, what you're left with is that consciousness. That consciousness fulfills the definition of satyam, something which is real. Because it never is not. It can never not be. Creation doesn't fulfill that definition, and yet it is. You say it is mithya. If it is mithya, it requires, mithya requires an adhishtana. It requires the satyam. What is going to be the satyam? It can only be being itself. What is the nature of being itself? Is consciousness. because consciousness can't be objectified. So consciousness also doesn't have a beginning and end. Beginning and end. So here in this verse it says, "And I am the consciousness." Because when we go through these teaching methodologies, consciousness can't be objectified. It's not going to land anywhere else except in the innermost subject, which is me. Right? So I am the consciousness, and therefore, I am all pervasive. I'm all pervasive because I'm the satyam, this is the mithya. There's nothing, this can't even be without me. Mithya can't be alone. Pull the clay out of the pot. You can't pull the clay out of the pot. You can't pull the water out of the ocean. It's not possible. The names and forms don't exist. They have no being whatsoever without the satyam. And so here, in this creation, you know, everything from the innermost components of the jiva to the most exterior in the universe. So going from, you know, the stula sharira, the physical body, to the sukshma sharira, all the way through even to the causal sharira. None of these things have any type of being without consciousness. So we're going to get into the deep sleep again later. Any of these things can't have any being without consciousness. So they're mithya, I'm the satya, therefore I'm all pervasive. This is a good time to bring in like the meadow analogy, if you imagine a meadow, or the dream analogy, because you can see, you try to imagine, you're having an imagination of a meadow, or of a meadow, you know, with all the details of the meadow. Try to have that imagination independent of such it. It's not possible. It's not possible. Because it's mithya. You can't pull it out and give it its own reality somewhere. Dream also is like that. It doesn't have an independent reality to pull it out and say, here's consciousness and here's this mithya creation. You can't separate the two. And so that means that I, who am not objectifiable, so I'm free from name, form, space, all of the objects in the creation, I am Swetta Siddha, and there's nothing that can be away from me. Then, that being so, then you can just look at your day-to-day experience at this very moment, and you just see, is there anything in your experience that's away from being itself? There isn't, because you say, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is. Everything gets being. Then you ask, is the isness, which none of this is away from, because we say everything is. Then you say, is the isness something that I'm looking at? You know isness because you know I am. I am, the amness is self-evident, right? Amness is self-evident. Is there an amness and an isness? I experience my amness and I experience this isness. What does that isness look like? So no, you don't experience isness. You experience name and form. The isness you experience is the amness. There's no amness isness. Yeah? There's only the being which I am, and everything enjoys it. Just like all the whole pot enjoys the clay, the whole creation enjoys being the being which I am. Because being is not objectifiable to look at. So it is only me. Yeah? And this me is consciousness. You can't separate the two because consciousness also is objectifiable. So what's going to make there being non-objectifiable being and non-objectifiable consciousness? What's separating? And that's not my experience. My experience is I am and I'm a conscious being. You get rid of all of your objectifiable experience and what do you have? Conscious being, me. Nirvikalpa Samadhi, you know, which they work for in yoga, and we call it Akhandakara Vritti. What is that, or Turiya, you know, in the Mandukya Upanishad, that what they call kind of the fourth state, that fourth state which is pervasive to all states? If you're just with yourself alone, you know, what is it? It's infinite conscious being, Satchit Ananda, you know. But that's not enough. You have to, for Vedanta, that's not enough. To have some samadhi experience, and oh, I'm infinite consciousness. You have to see this is infinite consciousness. This is infinite consciousness. Right? It's like you wouldn't say that the waves aren't water. The waves in the ocean, you know, You can't say they're not water. They're infinite water. They're water. You have to be able to say, this is consciousness. That's where you can say, I am Ishwara. So let's look at this. Let's just chant through this. Abharupasya Vishwasya. Abharupasya Vishwasya. Bhanam Basandhir Vina.
Bhanam Basandhir Vina.
Kadachin Navakalpeta.
Kadachin Navakalpeta.
Bhachahantena Sarvadaha.
Bhachahantena Sarvadaha.
Something specifically about the Drikta-Shivareka, the subject-object differentiation. So in order to, one who does the subject-object differentiation is the object.
Yes.
To the extent that the object does it, however inwards you get, if it's the object who is doing the subject-object differentiation, then by definition, Drikta-Shivareka cannot get rid of the object, right?
This is where the hang up in that is. Nothing will ever get rid of the subject. The subject is self-evident. So say if you say, you use this satyam mithya just in reference to the mind. The mind can say, I am the self, but then the self is not the mind. The consciousness, the self-evident nature that the mind enjoy, the being, you know, the consciousness, which is not apart from the mind, is self, let me use these words, troubling, problem words, it is self-known. It doesn't require the mind or the sense organs or anything to know it, because that's what we mean by self-evident. So now, in this knowledge, it's not a question of having the mind light up consciousness. It's not needed for that. What has to happen is that the mind has to, the ignorance of the mind has to be removed. So we actually say jnanam, knowledge, is what we call ajnana nivritti, the elimination of ignorance, because the problem that the mind has, right, rests with the mind, not with the atma. Mm. Right? Because the mind, the problem is that the mind, the mithya mind, takes itself to be the self. Mm. And it's not. It's functioning. The mind is functioning, and it. We use all of our pramanas, and there's an empirical of Vyavahara reality here. But so that's not going to go away as long as you have a body-mind sense organs. The perception of this creation, the existence of the mind, the existence of the sense organs, of the upadhi, the cross-migrating upadhi, that will stay. As long as the upadhi is there, you'll have all of this duality. But the problem is, only that the mind takes itself to be the consciousness. Right? And that's true too. See, that's the funny part. The mind is consciousness, just like the pot is the clay. But it takes itself, it takes it both ways. I, the mind, am the conscious being, and the conscious being is me, the mind. And so the mind is the conscious being. That's where the problem is. So that's the problem that the mind has, that ignorance has to be removed from the mind. It's not that the mind's going to disappear.
No. I was just asking specifically in terms of this prakriya.
Yeah.
That this prakriya cannot leave you without the object, because the object is doing the prakriya.
Nothing's going to leave you without the object. It'll just make the object mithya. It won't get rid of the object. You know, I mean, how can it get rid of the object? That would be like, I can get rid of subjective objects. Like if I have an imagination, it's subjective. I can get rid of that. But I can't get rid of objective objects, things that are in Vyavahara. They're pratibhasika, you know, subjective things, like the snake on the rope. I can totally get rid of that. But I can't get rid of the Ishwara Srishti, right? Because this body, mind, sense organs are part of Ishwara Srishti, Ishwara's creation. So knowledge isn't going to get rid of that, but it will get rid of the subjective repercussions of the getting rid of the ajnanam, the ignorance. It gets rid of the subjective effects of ignorance, but not the objective. It doesn't get rid of the Ishwara Srishti, it gets rid of the Jiva Srishti.
Is there ever like a feeling like
okay, I am consciousness, and maybe like, and this is just now occurring to me, like, and I'm, and the mind is a, you know, it's like a tool or something. And so, I mean, does that ever seem weird? I don't know how to say that better, but, I mean, because we're so used to identifying as bottom line, say, prior to recognizing yourself as consciousness, and even after, as the mind, that that personality, that way of seeing things, that comment on the srishti, and all that. And then maybe like that at some point it may seem kind of odd that that is the tool through which...
Well, because the ahankara between, you know, the self and the mind is... as the self is as close as you can get. The buddhi is as close as you could get.
Yeah.
And the buddhi always reflects consciousness, you know? So you know you could, you know, go blind and still be there, you know? So you have a little bit of distance with your sense organs. You certainly don't want to lose them. But with the mind, that ahankara is so much. That's why, in fact, for many people, myself included, I remember when I first started to, and just started with Swamiji listening, and I started to, my mind started to kind of grasp what he was talking about. I was in Rishikesh, and took a walk by myself. I was really kind of shaken and upset, and my mind was just almost started screaming inside. You know, it was like I was being annihilated, because the mind, the identification was so much. But of course, that's not true. I mean, truth is truth. Your knowledge or ignorance doesn't do anything to the reality. The fact is that you are the mind, but you are free of the mind too. You know, but that wasn't known. The ignorance for the part of the mind is total. It's not partial. You know, it's a total ignorance where, you know, in the total ignorance, what I mean by that is that it is convinced that it is the self. That's all I mean.
Well, how do we get the mind in there? Go along with this truth. I mean, you know,
it cannot go along with it. It has to see.
It just has to see.
Yeah, it's not a faith. Faith is helpful. Like even Swamiji, you know, the tenth man story.
Mm-hmm.
Swamiji said, you know, even if the old sadhu that comes up and tells the tenth man, you know, is going to tell him that you are the tenth man. Before he tells him that, he says, you know, the tenth man is, I promise you, I will show him to you, right? And so, and this boy has some shraddha in this old sadhu. And so he relaxes. He feels better. The problem's certainly not over. It's the next thing is, okay, show him to me. But he has shraddha. That's why in the verse that we were doing that Thursday night, were we doing that?
Is that the Gita?
Mm-hmm. We were talking about shraddha because those verses were talking about jnanam, knowing. It's like, I know this to be true because I have shraddha, not because I know.
Indirect knowledge.
It's but I have shraddha that indirect, what the Veda says is true. And so please teach me, I have that shraddha.
Mm.
You know? And so here, and so that shraddha is itself is coming. But it doesn't solve the problem. It just makes you feel better.
The part of... If I'm able to witness my mind, that awareness is still differentiatable from your awareness of your mind, though. So it's not...
Yes, no, I would say like this. Remember that for consciousness, there's no knowership. So it's not that the mind, the consciousness is knowing this mind. It's just like if we use the analogy of the sun, which is its own light,
mm-hmm.
right? It lights everything. It lights all of the mud puddles and all of the beautiful lakes equally. But it's not performing any act of lighting them up. It's because it is luminous that all these things get lit up.
Mm-hmm.
So like that, this conscious being that I am is not performing an act of knowing. But because it is consciousness, everything that falls within its scope, and so now from your standpoint, from the mind, that is lit. It is known. This mind. Because the mind is sattva, it reflects consciousness as though.
So if I experience that I'm witnessing my mind, it's really my mind witnessing my mind?
It's your mind,
object doing the differentiation.
Yeah, it's your mind enjoying the mitya mind, enjoying the consciousness. Right? And so it's not like the mind is witnessing itself, but the consciousness causes the mind to be illumined. And then this is also true. The mind can run, have a running commentary, like the mind can say with another vritti, oh, look, my mind is so peaceful.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But that's another vritti. That's also illumined. That's in, like an ahankara buddhi vritti. The okay. buddhi is commenting upon what's going on in the mind. Like the buddhi can say, oh, look, my mind is quiet. Oh, look, my mind is known. Right? Oh, look, my mind is known. And look, at I'm differentiating the mind from the consciousness. It's making a statement. But whatever statement it makes is itself illumined.
It's the thing shined upon, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now say, but say the mind says, oh, look, consciousness is self-evident. Consciousness is just consciousness. Look at it, it's not knowing anything. Is it? That's this running commentary. What is consciousness doing?
Nothing.
Like nothing. It's not saying, look. She gets it. She's recognizing me. No. Nothing. Just you're. That's why. That's the wonder, the beauty, though, is that your being, which is so whole and complete, is just always there as is. No matter what activity is going on, what thoughts you're having, good or bad, it's all taking place in that, in the presence of your being, you know, which is not doing anything.
And that's undivided. And that's undivided, right?
Totally undivided. It can't be touched. It can't be made better. It can't be made worse. It is just absolute. It's the only thing that is absolute. It is absolute. And it's absolute ananda means, when we say that ananda, it really doesn't mean bliss. It means that your nature, that the satchit, the ananda, that who is you, the you, is absolutely without any limitation. Without any limitation. That's the ananda. That's why when we
and
say...
And that's why it's not a knower. That's why it's can't not, be
yeah,
a knower.
It can't be a knower. The knower requires an upadhi. Mm. So it's good that when you're, say, contemplating, just sitting with your own being, to notice it, to just contemplate on those words as ananda, as anantam. Anantam means me, the self, which is limitless, totally unencumbered. And you see what an incredible ananda that is. And not, it's not the bliss of fulfillment of desire, or it's not the bliss of Ashanta Vritti. It's much more than that. It's the very infinite, unhindered nature of consciousness itself.
This may seem really odd, but are there two types of limitless, almost in a way, in that the all of this really is consciousness. Therefore, there really isn't anything else. Therefore, it's limitless. But from the perspective, okay, so maybe that's one. But then from the perspective of kind of like contemplating the limitless nature of myself, that's kind of different, it seems to me, because you're not contemplating, you're contemplating it sort of more directly as...
Well, when you're contemplating, see this, you can go like this. Mm-hmm. If it's limitless within the creation, like mm-hmm. you can have limitless space, it's all pervasive. Mm-hmm. Limitless in terms of quantity. There's no end. You can always add one. Infinite in terms of vastu. Vastu means objects. Or in terms of qualities, limitless. So that's not the limitless we're talking about, but that's vyavahara.
Yeah.
That's, you know, empirical limitlessness. And that's one of the things that becomes what we call kind of the vachyarta, the immediate meaning of the word that you have to then... But now we go to the limitlessness of the self. Mm-hmm. Now say we're talking just about Brahman. We're not acknowledging Maya. Just about Brahman. The Sat Chit, the very nature of Brahman, of yourself, is limitless in that there is no second thing encumbering it. Mm-hmm. Right? So limitless in that way, anantam. Mm-hmm. There's no second thing encumbering it. When we look at it in terms of wholeness and bring in the Maya, it's still limitless in that these names and forms have no substance apart from consciousness. So that's when you say, I am the whole. When you say, I am the whole, you're including, you don't have to say, I am the whole in reference to Brahman, because there are no parts. But so when you say, I am the whole, I mean, I, Brahman, the Sat-Chit-Ananda, the limitless being that I am all of this. Then with the satyamitya comes in.
So that actually kind of solves a problem for me in a little way, because like the recognition of the limitless nature of yourself, you know, that can be self-evident. But then I guess there was always this sort of expectation or something, thinking, okay, so then if everything else is this, then I should have somehow feel that. Or, you know what I mean, like experience that in some, there was some kind of wrong thinking there, I think.
Well, you know, like, say, just if you just stick with the room, I mean, what is in your the immediate vicinity of your sense perception, you can do a viveka where you see that no name and form, no part of your experience can be separated from your being, from satchit. It's impossible to do that. Then you realize the independence of satchit. You realize the independence of your being from all experience. So you can do that in terms of the stula sharira, everything that you experience. You can, if you just sit quietly, you can see that the satchit is steady, is changeless, timeless. And then there's this. This is like, just like if you imagine, you know, the meadow. Here's the meadow, right? And none of it is, the satchit is as pervasive and as self-evident as the names and forms through your sense perception. Then go to your mind and look at that in terms of any vritti, any imagination, any thought, right? Then it's very obvious that you are the satchit of the thought. And just get used to recognizing that. Because remember, the satchit, your conscious, the you, is never objectifiable. It's just nothing is ever away from it. But it's of a different order. This is mithya, that is satyam. It's a different order of reality. So this is kind of a like the snake on the rope. You know, there are two orders of reality. But the snake has no distance from the rope. Everything that you perceive through your sense organs or the vrittis in your mind, they have no distance whatsoever from satyam, from the self. But they are a different order of reality. They're mithya. So they don't have any independent being. And they go on changing and coming and going. That's why even thoughts that you have or emotions you have, you can actually change them on a dime if you have the skill to do that. They're not real. You know, they're not real in the sense of having any lasting reality. You know, the only thing that has lasting reality is your being.
And that's why you say the Shantavritti is falls in that mithya category?
Yes, also? Because vritti, it's a vritti. Whether it's a Shantavritti or a Shantavritti, it's mithya, and it's a vritti. And so we don't care about the vrittis. We care about, I mean, we do, but I mean, we'd rather have Shantavrittis than, you know, upset vrittis. Uh-huh. But the mind is never just going to have a Shantavritti and just stop there. The mind just does what it does.
Yeah.
Your knowledge settles down the mind tremendously because the mind has recognized the self. It's a self which is the ultimate shanti. It's the absolute shanti.
So a shantavritti won't always be there. But
the shanti will always be there.
Yeah.
The shanti of the self will always be there.
Yeah.
So the shanti of the, which is the self, the absolute shanti, is always holding whatever is going on in the mind. Mm. It is always completely present, untainted, uncovered, you know, but in reference to whatever the vrittis, good or bad, are. Good means they make me happy. Bad means they make me sad. Okay. Sukha dukkha.
I want to go back a step to the ego. And I've been noticing, you know, as yesterday I had some company and I was thinking, oh, I had company. And, you know, I accomplished this or that, and then I thought, oh, okay, that's the ahankara speaking. And I was wondering, Swamiji talks about deflating the ahankara, not getting rid of it. So I was thinking it might be helpful for me to think that this is part of Ishvara's world, and I was able to do this because of, I don't know, some grace or something.
Yeah, in the end, you can all give it all to Ishvara. But along the way in the thought process, say if there's a part of you that had been worried, like you hadn't been having company and maybe you could never have company anymore, then you can talk to that little part I can say that's a little complex in there. You can say, no, you did. You had company. Very good. You know?
So it's and then,
yeah. And then that part goes...
psychological.
Yeah, psychological. Then that part goes, yeah, I was able to do that. That's good. And then after that, those parts are all taken care of and feeling happy, then you can say, this is all Ishwara. How beautiful.
Oh,
then okay. You resolve it all into Ishwara. But first you have to resolve the psychology, yeah. That... Those psychological parts are there. They're just like flowers. You have to water the flower, you know, or it'll die. You have to love all the different parts, and they all feel happy. And then you all give it all to Ishwara. And,
Carol, the one who questions, right? The one who's a mumukshu, the one who questions, what is all this and who am I? That one who questions is mithya.
Is mithya is the buddhi.
Right. And that one who questions is the one that then has to realize that I am it. That one, not the I self, but the I, the questioning I, is not here, then I am going to die. I am going to. That I, so my mind, let's call it, you know, the mind is the one who's questioning. And when the mind realizes, the mind will also realize, well, I am mithya, the mind. I, the mind, am mithya. And I, the mind, I'm going to die. And I, the mind...
No, where was it? You have to think of it a little differently. Not exactly. It is not true, exactly. What you're missing is that the mind is Brahman. The mind is Brahman.
The
it's
mind
just that this
is a dependent reality and never away from consciousness. Yes.
Yeah, but no, that's not good enough. There is no... When you say... Like if I say the pot is the clay... You know, the pot, if I use words, which I have used, like the pot is never away from clay, the pot is clay. So that you have to have this, the pot is clay.
Right.
And so whatever you take to be yourself, if you take it to be the mind, well, the mind is continually changing all of the time. It's coming and going all of the time, right? But you are not. So now you think, you're not coming and going. The conscious being is not coming and going, right? That's the satyam.
Right.
And so you think that somehow you are going to die.
No. If the mind thinks that the mind is going to die, what is wrong? I mean, that's not a...
It depends on what you...
Well,
where is the death?
Well, there's death for the body. There's whatever death or reincarnation for the mind. You know, whatever.
If you want to talk on kind of that relative level, but the thing is that the truth of all of those things, what those things are actually are, never dies. What they actually are never dies. And so you're identifying with something that has no being.
No. That's why I started by saying that I, the one who's questioning, is mithya. Right? So the pot is questioning, and then the pot does realize, well, you know, I could be made into a plate.
Okay.
Right? So that is true, right?
There's something wrong with it.
Okay.
In spirit, there's something wrong with it. You can say, I guess what I don't like about it is that I don't feel like the satyam mithya is completely being honored there. Because the mithya is not actually a thing to die. You know, it's not a thing. There is no such thing. The thing, the vastu, is Brahman. And so even though we can talk in relative terms, because within the creation we experience birth and death and change, you know, and say you lose this body, then this body is not being experienced anymore in Vyavahara, nor are your sense organs experiencing this particular plane.
That's right.
Of reality. That is true. That's just Vyavahara. We have to accept all of that. But then the one that you may identify yourself, if you identify what makes you with any of those things, then that's not correct.
But isn't the only one who needs to do an identification with things? But, you know, awareness doesn't need to do an identification, right?
No, awareness has no problem.
Right, so then whenever we use the term I know that always in class we use the term I, the big I, as myself, my awareness. But, you know, I mean, so there's no... When the one who's trying to be helped, the one who's questioning, that part is the mind always. And
yes.
So the mind is going to go through whatever it's going to go through, including birth and death and whatever.
That's right.
It is.
All of that,
through,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's true.
Right.
But for you as a mumukshu, somebody who wants to gain knowledge, you basically, you know, you want to know, who am I really? You know? Who is the self? Who am I? Who is Ishwar? Who is God? What is this creation? What am I doing here? All of these type of questions.
Right.
So the mind has those questions.
Right.
And it has to be able to know, not with a theoretical indirect knowledge, oh, this world is Ishwara and, you know, I'm Atma. That isn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
You need to totally recognize that yourself, that the mind is yourself, but as it is yourself, you are never changing. Even as the mind is your very, that's the Satyam Mitya. As it is yourself, you are never changing. See what I mean? That's why dream analogy or imagination is so useful, because like when the dream is, say that when the dream is occurring, there's so much reality, the ahankara, there's so much identification, there's so much going on, there's, you know, emotions taking place, total identification with the upadi. Then the alarm goes off, that dream totally disappears, and nothing has happened. So much has happened, but nothing has happened. You know, that's the Satyam Mitya. And so if you want to look at it like that, you can say, yeah, I mean, this whole creation will go into dissolution and everything in it. Or when this body dies, all of your experience on this realm will be gone. You know?
Right.
And then the mind can say, you know, I don't want it to be gone, or I want it to be gone, or what does that mean? That's all legit. That's all manana. You know? But in the end, you have to recognize that nothing happens.
But when you say a statement like I am never changing, I will, so consciousness is not ever going to make that statement. So how can the I stand for the consciousness there?
Because the I is now, when I'm using language, when I say I am going to the store, the I is referring to the body.
Right.
If I say I am thinking, it's referring to the mind. If I say I am Brahman, it's referring to my self-evident self.
Does this verse finally answer the question of what happens when a tree falls in the forest and there's nobody there to hear it?
That's an interesting question. For us, you know, Ishwara is there. Like, say, for instance, if you have a, you have my meadow analogy, if you have a meadow,
there is no tree,
imagination,
there is no
you put a tree, you have a tree in the forest and it falls down and there's a big storm, but you don't have any people, there's no animals in it, there's just the trees. There's the meadow with the trees and all of the, this big storm. All of the animals have fled. All of the beings have fled. Everybody that has ears has fled, right? But you have not fled, right? Ishwara has not fled. And so whatever the noise of the storm and the rustle of the trees and the grass, all of that is part of the Maya Upadi. And it is heard by Ishwara.
That must be why I'm of the dumb. Because that question never. I always thought, yeah, of course there's noise if the tree falls in front. I mean, you know, so I must have always been of the dumb. Even as a child.
Or never understood the question.
I always get a little nervous because I think there's kind of a balancing act going on here where you say, I am the mind, and then you know, I is free of the mind. And there's a kind of a process there, or you.
It's the same type of thing where we say that just to make you understand the Satyam Mitya relationship, and the example for it that should make it clear is the pot can say, rightly so, that I am clay. Right? Because it is. If you have a clay pot and the pot says, I am clay, that's completely true. It is clay. It's nothing but clay, in fact.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what it doesn't know until it's a jnani pot, it doesn't know that I, the clay, is free of the pot. That I am not dependent on the pot at all. I'm the Satyam. I, the clay, am Satyam. I, the pot, am Mitya. Right?
Well, that, there's the part where you feel responsible to remember that, or.
Well, with knowledge, all the different prakriyas, the different teaching methodologies, are meant to make you see that to the point where it's not about memory.
Mm.
You know, the parts that need to remember it are the parts that haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you have to remember it because you're out on a limb somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you're out on a limb. And then you have to remember it to pull the recollection.
The bridge of.
You know,
so
is the pulling yourself back.
So if you have a little stress there, then that indicates...
When you have stress there, you're out on a limb. You want to first take care of the one who's feeling stressed, like, why are you feeling stressed and what is that about? And it's okay, blah, blah. And then you pull it back.
I was just thinking about what you were talking about with Kiki with reference to Nitya Vyasam and how you can see in that practice that what you think is going to happen, so to speak, is happening. You know, it's already like with the death, so to speak, of every thought. Like this idea that you have from the standpoint of identification with the mind, that oh, the mind's going to die and the body's going to die. It seems to me that when you're sitting quietly, just watching thoughts sort of come into manifestation, sustain, resolve, that is what's happening.
Exactly.
That is what's happening, and that's what's going to happen.
And nothing more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. That's right. That's exactly that. That's nice.
No sweat, huh?
Let's have prayer. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.